This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The official name, the Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act, approved by Congress in 2010, scheduled to be mostly phased in over 4 years, quickly dubbed by those who disliked it Obamacare, generally referred to by others as the Affordable Care Act. You likely know all this already. Perhaps you also know it was summer of 2012 that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled as constitutional almost all aspects of the health care law. The one main exception that states could not be forced to expand their Medicaid programs is a continuing source of political fallout, and you probably knew that too. What you may not know is how the health law is having a huge impact on your local hospital. So that very specific issue, certainly one that could affect you and your loved ones, Virginia Hospitals and the Affordable Care Act, will be our focus right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. 888-WMRA-TALK, the easy way to remember our call-in number. The Affordable Care Act and its impact on Virginia hospitals is our topic. If you've been following the headlines, you know that one aspect of the federal health law that some call Obamacare has become a major controversy in Virginia's General Assembly. That issue, whether or not to expand Medicaid coverage as originally intended in the federal law, is now so contentious that it is threatening to derail plans for a new state budget. And I'm sure we'll get to more of that in a bit. But if you've been following state news closely, you also know the debate over Medicaid has a huge impact on hospitals across the Commonwealth. When the federal law was passed several years ago, hospitals were to incur some significant cutbacks in some areas of federal funding, with the idea at that time that the loss of those millions of dollars would be made up for by new payments in Medicaid. And if you've got questions about that, you certainly are welcome to join us at 888-967-2825. But the flare-up over Medicaid got us wondering just what other ways the federal health care law could be affecting medical centers across Virginia. Several people have agreed to help us get a handle on that this hour, and we begin with two of those people. With us by phone, the president of the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, Larry Sartoris. Mr. Sartoris, welcome.
Nice to be with you.
And here with me at the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, the man who has headed up the University of Virginia Medical Center for the past 12 years, Ed Howell. Thank you for making time for us.
Afternoon, Tom. Glad to be with you.
Well, Mr. Howell, in many quarters, this thing that we're discussing seems fraught with emotion. Even the name of the federal law gets people going. Some get upset if you call it Obamacare. Others are miffed if they hear it called the Affordable Care Act. I understand that you've come up with a different name for the federal health care law. So could you tell us what that is and why you chose the words that you chose to describe it?
Sure, Tom. Glad to. I think maybe before I begin, I'd share with you that when I got into healthcare 37 years ago, little did I think that healthcare would be a focus for public policy debate. But as you said, it certainly has, and the emotions run fairly strong in some circles. As you know, the Affordable Care Act was put in place to extend the coverage for Americans into areas that weren't previously covered, namely individuals from 18 to 64 years of age. And that was because the original Medicare and Medicaid, dating back to 1964 and 65, were what you would call categorical coverage. I recall it by a speech that then-Senator Hubert Humphrey gave on the floor of the Senate, in which he said the measure of a society is known by it, how it treats those in the dawn of life, in the twilight of life, and the shadow of life. And that, for the most part, up until now, reflected Medicare and Medicaid. The twilight of life is the aged, and that's Medicare. And the dawn of life is the very young, that's Medicaid, children. And the shadow of life, those are various individuals who categorically have disabilities. And based on income, up until the Affordable Care Act, that's basically how Medicare and Medicaid worked. The Affordable Care Act said we want to expand that coverage for individuals 18 to 64 on the low end of the income spectrum. And so that's where the term Affordable Care Act came from. But your reference is one that I sometimes call it the Accountable Care Act, because it really changes who's accountable for what in the delivery system. Heretofore, it was pretty much an individual had an illness or a perceived illness. They, quote unquote, encountered the healthcare system. There was a bill rendered for that encounter, and someone paid it, either an insurance company, the federal government, or the state and federal government through Medicare or Medicaid, or the individual. But now that's being expanded so that providers and, I believe, the patients themselves are expected to accept greater accountability, accountability for outcomes, accountability for quality, and accountability in some circles for personal responsibility. On occasion, I also refer to it as the accessible health care plan, because just providing payment won't be enough. There are some places in America and here in Virginia where it's very difficult to get access to care. And I think all of us will be expected to expand our coverage to make sure that health care is accessible. So I use accountable and accessible when I refer to this health plan, because I think it's more than just affordability.
Larry Sortaris from the Virginia Hospital Association. Affordable, accountable, accessible. Any response to any of that?
Well, I think Ed's right. It's somewhat all of the above. But let's come back to a thread that was begun by Ed, which is who is eligible to receive certain of the benefits of the Act. And that will also bring us back to Virginia and what's happening in this year's General Assembly pretty quickly. While a big portion of the Act was devoted to, or a big focus of the Act was devoted to providing coverage for people who don't already have it, again, those in the age groups that Ed mentioned, between age 19 and age 64, between Medicare and Medicaid, those folks got divided into the 30 million people guesstimated to be in a category that would receive some type of assistance were those who fell below 138% of poverty, who based on that one standard, income eligibility at or below 138% of poverty would become eligible for Medicaid, and others above that. Let's take for a family of four, between 138% of poverty and four times poverty, which for a family of four is in the low 90,000s of dollars, would receive some form of public assistance to purchase health care through federal or state exchanges that would be set up to presumably ease their way into the purchase of care and to be able to compare benefits and make their selections. So you divide the eligible population is divided into those who would be eligible for Medicaid and those who would be able, through some type of private marketplace, to purchase their care with government assistance.
Larry Sartoris and Ed Hall, I understand correctly. The way the situation currently stands in terms of people having access to the health care coverage for the poor, Medicaid, in Virginia, and each state is different, but in Virginia, you have to be a parent of a child or a child at 36% of poverty or below in order to currently receive assistance with your health care coverage. And with the poverty level set at about $22,000 a year for a family of four, you're talking at about a third of that. You're talking at somewhere around the level of somebody who makes less than $8,000 a year in order to qualify and has to be a parent.
Right.
It seems to me that that means there are an awful lot of people out there currently who show up at emergency rooms who are a little bit above $8,000 a year and they don't have any coverage. That, I would imagine, causes problems.
Tom, your assessment is essentially correct. There are some variations in it, but I think it's complex enough, and we won't get into those this afternoon. But your assessment of the gap, if you wish, in terms of coverage is essentially correct. I use the term quite often medically indigent because I know that a large number of these persons are employed. They're either in an employment situation in which they have very limited or no employer coverage, or they're part-time workers who don't qualify for health care coverage. These are vital individuals in our current workforce. They do come to us, and they use some of the most expensive ways to receive care as a way of filling in that coverage gap. You mentioned emergency rooms. That's certainly at the top of the list.
Our guests on this edition of Virginia Insight, Ed Howell, Chief Executive Officer of the University of Virginia Medical Center. He's with me here in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville. And Larry Sartoris, President of the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association. He's with us by phone. Anything and everything about how the federal health care law, officially known as the Affordable Care Act, could be impacting Virginia hospitals is our focus this hour. And if you have questions for our guests or a comment to offer, you're welcome to call in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this from Lauren on our Facebook page, gentlemen, who says, how are hospitals coping with the shortage of nurses and doctors? With many more people getting health coverage, isn't this problem of inadequate medical personnel quickly becoming a crisis?
Clearly, the bringing in additional persons who we believe, once there is more coverage, will be receiving additional care is going to create some real challenges. There's no question about it. There are some ways that we're approaching it. One is team care, Tom. This is the working of physicians, nurses, and physician extenders. I believe that if we simply put the responsibility solely on physicians and nurses to respond to this health care increase in demand, we just won't have enough. I'm very concerned, being at an educational institution, about our abilities to keep up with supply. Maybe a greater factor than the expanded coverage is the aging baby boomer population. I'm one of them myself. And the reality is, as we age, we develop more healthcare needs. Things just begin to fall apart. And so that's going to place increased demands as well. So from an education perspective, we're very concerned about us keeping up our response to the demand that's out there, a combination of increased coverage and increased demand by the population that we now have.
Larry Sartoris with the Hospital Association, are your members across the Commonwealth struggling with having enough medical personnel to meet the need?
Sure. It's a problem now, and as Ed indicated, it's going to be more of a problem in the future, not only because those of us who may be, let's say, in our senior years, have more health care requirements, and as the baby boomers age, there will be more of us, but many of today's current providers come from the age cohorts that are nearing retirement. People above 60, people above 55, people above 50. All of those.
I apologize for interrupting, but we do have to go to a break.
Okay.
And so it sounds like Lauren was onto something, that there is a problem. In terms of solutions, I'll try to remember to ask you more about that when we get back. But we also have an additional guest from another hospital in our WMRA region who's going to join in on this conversation when we get back in just a bit more than 1 minute. Joining us now by phone is the chief medical officer of the medical center based in Fisherville, Virginia, Augusta Health's Dr. Fred Costello. Dr. Costello, thank you for making time for us on Virginia Insight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Hello, Fred. Glad you're with us.
That's Ed Howell.
Fred,
from
afternoon.
UVA Medical Center. Also with us, Larry Sartoris from the Virginia Hospital Association. And our basic question is how the Affordable Care Act is affecting hospitals in Virginia. So how's it affecting you in Augusta County?
Well, I've heard a bit of the conversation, and we're not particularly unique in the issues that we have to deal with. We have similar issues with expensive emergency department use. As Ed pointed out, it is the most expensive place to get care. And so we tend to see excessive use of the emergency department. 20% of those patients are Medicaid patients, and then another 20% are have no insurance coverage at all. And as has been pointed out previously, oftentimes those patients wait until their conditions are significantly intense to the point where when they do seek care, the amount of resources required to care for them is a lot larger. So we're seeing that. And, of course, we have no options but to take care of these patients, and of course we do. But as Ed mentioned with the baby boomers, the increased numbers of folks that are going to be seeking care in our emergency department and the increased numbers that are not reimbursable really is problematic for us.
You know, I think also, Tom, you were asking how are we responding. I think it's pretty clear we're going to have to do some things differently. We're going to have to utilize our resources perhaps with group clinic visits.
Tell me what that means. What's a group clinic?
Well, that means that you may have a follow-up to a surgical procedure, and rather than having a one-on-one encounter with your physician, there may be five of you or six of you with similar procedures who are in a group who have an encounter with the physician at the same time. It almost looks like a focus group. And in a couple of areas of our hospital, we're already doing that. Dr. Bill Steers in urology has been doing that for a while. And quite frankly, it's been very well received. It's a good use of his time. And the inadvertent outcome of it has been very well received, and you create some support groups. So I think we're going to have to do things differently. We also, in January, UVA was approved by the Medicare program for an accountable care organization. Now, this is limited to Medicare patients, and we really have not had a similar organization. We're going to be learning how to do that. But I think, you know, as we started off our conversation, it's about more than affordability. There are other responsibilities we're all going to have to undertake as our healthcare environment changes.
Well, Dr. Costello, we only have you with us for a few minutes, so let me get back to some other issues about the impact of the Affordable Care Act. Your facility, which used to be known as Augusta Medical Center, but I understand the proper name these days is Augusta Health, sort of became the center of a firestorm of political debate this past weekend. The governor was visiting your main center in Fishersville, pitching for his desire to have Medicaid expanded. And just down the street, the Republicans from the Virginia House of Delegates, who adamantly opposed that idea of expanded Medicaid, were holding a press conference calling your medical center the most profitable in the state and an indication that you weren't really hurting and that the whole idea of the original plan to expand Medicaid wasn't going to be a problem for you.
Well, we did get a call from the governor, and obviously when the governor calls, we weren't going to say no, so we were happy to host him in a visit. And we shared a number of items with him and the Secretary of Health, talking about things like the fact that Augusta Health has a history of trying to be extremely responsible with our community's money, and not incurring debt. So, for instance, recently we built a cardiovascular tower, and whenever you don't take debt, the requirements are a little bit higher for your financial viability. So in order for us to essentially pay for that without taking debt, we have to continue to perform well, and because we're an independent hospital as opposed to others that are in groups of hospitals, it's in particularly significant for us to be responsible for this money. So we take that very seriously. And some of the things that we shared with the governor was the fact that we had a patient here who was a member of our medical home clinic, which we've implemented over about the past 2 years, because we know that we're going to have to proactively treat these patients. And as we were talking about, if we can keep these people out of the emergency room and keep them out of having their condition get to the point where it's so severe, we're much better off. And the example that we showed the governor was that with a group of about 150 patients and treating them, having them come into the medical home clinic twice a month, seeing the physician one time and then seeing the care extenders other time, we were able to reduce ED visits by about 9%, reduce inpatient visits by about 60%, as well as having significant impacts on their clinical outcomes, a 24% improvement in their diabetes control, as evidenced by their hemoglobin A1C, and a 40% improvement in their lipid control. So these are some things that we've been doing over the past couple years to try to proactively deal with the impact of these things. And frankly, we don't apologize for being financially viable. This is a requirement of any organization to remain viable long into the future. So all of that said, our charges are still less than the 25th percentile in the state. So it's not, we feel like we're being excellent stewards of our resources. I think it's a bit unfair to characterize us in that fashion.
You weren't with us at the top of the hour, but it was at the beginning of today's broadcast that I mentioned that anybody who's been following the news on this probably already knows that this debate over whether or not to expand Medicaid in Virginia, as had been the original intent of the federal health care law passed by Congress in 2010, seems to be having a financial impact on hospitals. That 4 years ago, hospitals sort of accepted the idea that some federal funding they currently got was going to go away under the new Affordable Care Act, and that that money would be made up for by the expansion of Medicaid. But now that the expansion of Medicaid is being made a decision about it on a state-by-state basis, and so far the decision in Virginia has been to not expand Medicaid, there are lots of hospitals who say they are hurting. Is yours one of those hospitals? Are you losing out on money that you badly need because Medicaid was not expanded?
Well, it's clear that we have lost, we have lost and will continue to lose money because our mission for the community includes a number of services for which we don't make money. So there's a number of services that we provide for the community, psychiatric services, and there's others where we feel like it's our mission to provide those services and we lose money on those. And the reality is that there is cost shifting that's occurring where private insurance premiums end up helping pay for those. So in the absence of Medicaid expansion, the ability to continue with some of these services over the long term will really be put to the test. So, you know, I want to be responsible in my response to you. Are we hurting at this time? No, but we certainly have lost money and will continue to lose money if this expansion does not occur, and that will impact not only those people who supposedly would have their Medicaid expanded and be covered under this act, but it's going to impact everybody. And you have to remember that we're also the largest employer in the whole Augusta County, employing about 2,200 folks. And so as we make less money, our ability to continue with those jobs could be impacted.
Dr. Fred Costello is Chief Medical Officer for Augusta Health, based in Augusta County, Virginia. Dr. Costello, I know you have a very hectic schedule. Thank you for carving out a few minutes for us today on Virginia Insight.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye, Fred.
Thanks for joining us, Fred.
So still with us here on this edition of Virginia Insight, the man who has served as CEO of the UVA Medical Center for the past 12 years, Ed Howell. Plus, by phone, the man who's headed up the Virginia Hospital Association for the past 27 years, Larry Sartoris. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. If you want to talk to either of them, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Mr. Sartoris, let me make sure I'm not jumping to any conclusions here. Is it your position, and is it the position overwhelmingly of hospitals in Virginia, that they want our state lawmakers to approve expanding Medicaid coverage?
I'm going to give you a really strange answer and say no, but let me explain why.
Oh, please do.
There is
I'm waiting to hear this, Larry.
There's a proposal on the table now in the General Assembly to deal with the coverage gap situation, and we're talking about a coverage gap for 400,000, roughly 400,000 Virginians, people who have incomes between that 36% of poverty that you mentioned and 138% of poverty, people who typically are between age 19 and 65, people who are working Virginians but don't necessarily make a lot of money. And that's an alternative that's alive and well in the Senate. It's either being called a Virginia marketplace or it's being called a private option solution where those people would be enfranchised to health care not through the state Medicaid program, but by allowing those people to have private sector health care policies purchased on their behalf. And they would become in that part of managed care networks with private health plans, just like most of us who have private health care insurance in Virginia. So
if
the
I
answer
understand
is
correctly,
we,
Mr. Sartoris, you're speaking about what the Democrats in the Virginia State Senate called their compromise proposal that they're calling Marketplace Virginia, and that would, instead of specifically expanding Medicaid, it would create a marketplace where people who are in poverty or close to poverty could, at very low cost with federal subsidies, purchase health insurance. And the House of Delegates, controlled by an overwhelming majority of Republicans, have so far rejected that. They call that Medicaid expansion with a different name.
That's true. Let me correct you on one thing, though. Correct is not the right word. I would not say it's just Democrats on the Senate side. Three
right,
of the most important Republican leaders in the Virginia State Senate, Emmett Hanger, who is in your region, Walter Stosch, who's here in Henrico, Virginia, and the chairman of the Senate, you know, one of the co-chairmen of the Senate Finance Committee, and then John Watkins, also from here in Central Virginia, are great advocates of this. In fact, it's Senator Watkins who is responsible for including in the Senate budget this proposal. So
and
it's a bipartisan proposal on the Senate side.
On the Senate side, but pretty much with unanimity, if I could say that word correctly. In the House, Republicans, who out of 100 seats, I think, control 67 seats, are saying there is no way we are going to go for anything that looks like expanding Medicaid coverage at this point in time. And this proposal from the Senate looks like expanded Medicaid coverage. Your organization really wishes that those House Republicans would change their mind about that.
Absolutely, because we think this is a sounder proposal than just including Medicaid per se. It automatically gets people on the road to care that is better managed on their behalf. While it's not a perfect solution, the question from earlier about where do the providers come from for an expanded population of those eligible for whatever program. By the way, that number in Virginia is about 400,000 people. I'll remind you of that. Mm-hmm. Well, if they're enrolled in health plans, the health plans have existing networks of hospitals physicians and other health professionals to which and to whom those participating in the private option would have access. So it helps to deal with the problem. It's not somebody that's given a card in a program who now has to go out and randomly look for a physician someplace. They would be have available to them the network that the health plan already has.
You can talk anytime. Your microphone is turned on.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'll weigh in terms of, go ahead, Larry.
No. I was just saying you've never known to be voiceless, Ed.
No, and don't worry, not this time either. You know, from the UVA's perspective, we're somewhat agnostic. We think we need to take care of the coverage gap. There's a public option, and we know that as Medicaid expansion. There's the private option that the Senate has proposed, and we know that as Marketplace Virginia. And we think that both of those has, you know, the pros and cons of it, and we'd be in favor of either of them because we think that coverage gap needs to be resolved. You were talking earlier with Dr. Costello about the overall financial performance. I may want to weigh in here a little bit in Augusta Health's defense. I would share with you that up until 1983, going back to when we began the conversation on the program, when Medicare first started, it was cost-based reimbursement. So physicians and hospitals simply told payers what it cost and somebody paid it. There was the observation that healthcare was immune or insulated from the marketplace, so they said, you need to start focusing like a business. So Augusta Health has been doing just that, as have all the healthcare providers. And so when you act financially responsible, I'm not so sure in a competitive environment that should be criticized. I think, you know, they're doing what they've been asked to do. But if you talk about numbers and why we are supportive, UVA Medical Center is a safety net hospital. We provide coverage now for a large number of these individuals who are uninsured. And we have a mechanism that helps us do that. We have an add-on to our Medicaid payment. It's called a disproportionate share hospital because we're a hospital that treats a disproportionate share number of these individuals. And those dollars are scheduled to go away under the Affordable Care Act. And let me give you some real numbers. That is, there's two components because Medicaid is a combination of a federal and state program. It's $90 million over the next 5 years in Medicaid DSH dollars and another $32 million in Medicare DSH dollars.
Tom, so $122 million that your hospital is losing,
yes,
because of the current status of the Affordable Care Act.
And I'd try to be more clear. We're not now losing it, but we will lose under the Act going forward. Now, you compound that, Tom, with another $156 million in Medicare cuts that we're going to be receiving during the same period. And I hear the music in the background, and I'll finish that when we come back from
break. Well, that's good, because that's going to give me a chance to catch up with the math, and hopefully there's somebody listening who's writing it down on a pad and can figure it out as well. We're talking about the impact of the Affordable Care Act on hospitals in Virginia. A lot of that has to do with the raging debate going on in the state capitol over Medicaid, but we understand there are other ways that the national law could be impacting your local hospital. We'll get to some of that when we continue in a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. Phone numbers 888-WMRA. Talk in all numbers 888-967-2825. If you have a question or comment for Larry Sartoris, president of the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, and or Ed Howell, chief executive officer of the University of Virginia Medical Center, we have a call coming in from Richmond. Greg, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight.
It's great to be here again, Tom. Thank you very much for accepting my call.
I recognize this voice. This is Dr. Greg Gelbert, who has been a fairly frequent guest on this show in years past. What's going on in your world in Richmond today, Greg?
So Joe Fields Johnson and myself, Joe's a fourth-year medical student in Virginia, and I are down here to, I guess, lobby the more Republican side of the House in order to understand their position on why they will not support expansion of Medicaid. My stand is both spiritual and practical. In Matthew 40, it says, what you do to the least of mine, you do to me. And to me, that means that we should be covering the poor because they are part of God. The other side of it is the more practical that I see every day in my office in Charlottesville. As you know, Tom, my office is on a maybe a bit poorer side of town, and so about 10 to 15% of my patients are uninsured, and we charge them just a sliding fee scale. So these people are the working poor. They're the ones who wait tables at the restaurant you go to. They're the ones who maybe clean your house, pump your gas. They might be working in jobs that are part-time, so they can't get insurance. So they're holding down one, two, or in some cases, I have patients who have three jobs to maintain their status, which is basically a small apartment and feeding their kids. So what's surprising to me is that even when these delegates meet with some of these folks who have no insurance and hear their plight, that they still hold on to their ideologies about fiscal responsibility, which I understand too. There's enough support now in people's thinking that the that it's actually cheaper to go with the Medicaid expansion, so that hospitals like Ed Howells and other ones like ours at Martha Jefferson on the other side of town don't lose so much money. I just met with Sam Rasool, who's a financial person with the medical system in Roanoke, and he's a new member of the delegates. He's voting in favor because he sees that it's fiscally responsible. But it's I have to say that maybe it's the fact that I'm fasting, I'm getting tired, but I'm feeling a little discouraged at the idea that we can actually move people to vote the other way. But I think,
Dr. Gelber, you just mentioned something, fasting, and I don't think we've explained that. I did see something on Facebook earlier today. Somebody had posted a picture of you with a sign saying something about you were going to fast until this Medicaid coverage issue was taken care of.
That's correct.
I got to tell you, Greg, from everything I've been hearing, it does not sound like the issue is going to be settled anytime soon. How long a fast are you going to be on?
Oh, well, I mean, to be honest, I'm not a great faster. I get hungry in 3 hours. So I'm just drinking juice and water. And I know that the House is probably going to end the session on Saturday. So I feel like at the most it will be a three-day fast, Tom. If they continue to decide, if the Republicans are unable to pull out the Medicaid expansion bill from the rest of the budget bill for the year, then it may go on longer. And at that point, I'll decide how I'm feeling. So I am no martyr, that's for sure.
Did you have a question for either of our guests, Dr. Greg Gelbert?
Well, first, I really appreciate hearing both of them speak because I've been part of the Medical Executive Committee at Martha Jefferson. And I've met Mr. Howell a few times in the past. But I guess my question is, are you frustrated with the way things are going? And do you have any other inside solutions on how we can steer people towards a better vote?
Dr. Gilbert, this is Ed Howell. I can't say that I'd use the word frustrated. I think that I understand the political process of discourse and debate, and I'm following it very closely. But I wish that I was a little more optimistic than I am that we'd get to a point where we could get this resolved. I think it's critically important. I'm here representing hospitals. Larry Satoris is here representing hospitals. You're a physician who provides care to these people. Unfortunately, too much of the debate has not included the patients. the individuals that we're talking about that you care for and that we care for who deserve coverage, who deserve to be cared for, who deserve to be included in these discussions.
Thanks,
Larry Sartoris, anything to add?
You know, this may sound crazy, too, but I think that I'm not sure the parties are as far apart as the rhetoric would sometimes suggest. The issue really gets joined around the issue of how this gets paid for. And the fundamental answer to that is that right now Virginians between 2014 and 2018 will be paying a lot in taxes to support the Affordable Care Act. The proposals that are on the table are to bring back almost $7 billion during that period to pay for some type of program to fill the coverage gap. Again, the private option is what I continue to call it. And those on one side believe that there will continue to be a flow of those funds, likely to be, and those on the other, those who don't necessarily want to go forward, are concerned, without some justification, that the federal government will not be in a position in the future to subsidize at such a substantial rate as they will be in the initial years of the program. If the federal government's commitment goes away or is reduced, that means that somehow Virginia has to come up with the additional money. The proposal that's before them today suggests accepting that money while it's available and then creating some type of strategy to gracefully to withdraw from the program if the federal money goes away, or to find some other way to subsidize the needs of people of lesser means who don't have access to health care. But I think if you really get down to the bottom of it, it's all around that relatively small piece of all the talk that's been generated around the issue. It's that fear that the federal dollars will at some point dry up. And if there's some way, if there's a middle way, let's call it that, and many of us, again, believe that the marketplace, the private option, is that middle way, then there's some hope that people can come together.
Dr. Greg Gelbard from Charlottesville, in the middle of what I guess is accurate to call a fasting protest outside the Virginia General Assembly in Richmond. Would that be fair, Dr. Gelbard?
Fair enough.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you.
So a lot of the conversation has been about the debate over whether or not to expand Medicaid in Virginia. And as I think you gentlemen have made clear, hospitals across the Commonwealth really would like to see what you call the coverage gap taken care of, whether it's with expanding Medicaid or some other mechanism like what has been approved by the state Senate, but so far that the Republicans in the House of Delegates oppose. Tell me, however, if there are other important ways in which the Affordable Care Act, this national health care law that is now mostly in effect, is affecting Virginia hospitals. Ed Howell from UVA Medical Center, Larry Sartoris from the Virginia Hospital Association.
Let me start with that, Larry, if you don't mind. I think one of the things, Tom, I want to put in front of our listeners is the fact that the aging baby boomer generation, combining with a large retiring segment of our existing workforce for physicians and nurses, is already creating some challenges in terms of our ability to respond. Make no mistake about it, I do believe that this nation is facing one of the potentially worst physician shortages that we've ever faced without the Affordable Care Act, and we're already in the midst of a nursing crisis. Those create some real challenges. So we're, even without the Affordable Care Act, going to have to do things differently in terms of outcomes, in terms of putting some technology in people's homes, in terms of working with individuals to help maintain their health without receiving direct health care. You add now these additional, let's say in Virginia, 400,000 people into the coverage mix, and you compound an already existing problem. And you at UVA, we're in the business of education as well as in the business of caring. And we're also there to find new ways to deal with health care's challenges. So the Affordable Care Act affects all of the things we do, whether it's training, whether it's developing new ways, or whether it's providing care to individuals, because it comes at a time when our system is already strained.
Larry Sartoris, other than the Medicaid debate, any other important ways that the Affordable Care Act is having an impact on hospitals across Virginia?
Well, there are many in terms of regulatory compliance, improvement in quality, things that Ed has touched on. But there's something else I'm not sure we have touched on this afternoon at all, and I think it's worth injecting it into the discussion, and that is the business community's interest in finding a solution. Last year when these same issues came up, I don't think business was particularly involved. They were somewhat. But this year, they're a major factor in the discussion going on at the state capitol. And whether that's the state chamber of commerce or the regional or local chambers of commerce or just the Virginia business community in general. And they've decided several things, and among those would be that creating a better way to deal with the coverage gap. They are very supportive of the private option I keep referring to, is good for Virginia's economy. They're also intensely aware that a lot of the taxes that are being paid as a result of the Affordable Care Act are going to Washington, and they're being paid by the business community. If those dollars don't come back to Virginia, the business community, in a sense, gets to pay twice. Their tax dollars go to Washington to help nourish a coverage gap solution in Virginia, but the money isn't coming back. And when people come into a hospital, to the emergency room or an admitted who have no coverage, that results in uncompensated care, and someone has to pay for it. And a huge portion of that cost shift goes to the employers, who in a very responsible way provide health insurance benefits on behalf of their own employees. So they feel they're getting to pay, in a sense, twice for the same thing, and they'd like to only pay once and see it done the right way.
Larry, you bring up a very good point. This whole issue, this whole debate, is not just confined to health care. It's much more wide sweeping than that.
Larry Sartoris, in your position for almost three decades now as president of the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, you have spent a lot of time over the years talking with and getting to understand Virginia's state lawmakers. What do you understand about the position of those who oppose, whether you call it Medicaid expansion, or the compromise proposed by the Virginia State Senate that they're calling Marketplace Virginia to use federal dollars to close this coverage gap? What do you understand about the Republicans, particularly in the House, who oppose this?
Well, what I understand is that some of their fears are not ill-founded. It's not that there isn't some rational basis for their concerns. The real issue is to find a way between the House and the Senate to create a compromise that does two things. It fills the coverage gap through a program, preferably that has a lot of private sector features to it. Again, coming back to the marketplace or the private solution that's been discussed. At the same time, is able to allay the concerns of those, many of them in the House of Delegates, some in the Senate, who feel that the risks are greater than the rewards. And that's all about the art of compromise within the legislative process, which is, at the end of the day, what the legislative process historically has always been about and always will be.
You know, Larry, you make a very good point and, as always, very articulate. The one thing I would point out is that in this debate, I often hear, well, what if the federal government reneges on its commitment to Virginia? My sense is that it's highly unlikely that Virginia would ever be singled out. If there's any reneging on the commitment, it would be a nationwide reneging. We'd have a nationwide response, not just a Virginia response.
Yeah, you're absolutely on target there. I'm not even sure they believe that if there's reneging, it's unique to us. They're concerned about the entire debt and deficit issue at the federal level.
Yeah.
No question.
You have any sense on how long it's going to take before, one way or another, this issue is settled?
I'm not sure I'd make
I wanted to close out with an impossible question.
Right. I'm not sure I'd make book on that one way or the other. I mean,
well, then we'll have to stay tuned. Our guests have been the president of the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, Larry Sartoris, as well as University of Virginia Medical Center Chief Executive Officer Ed Howell. Plus, earlier in the hour, the Chief Medical Officer at Augusta Health in Fishersville, Virginia, Dr. Fred Costello. Gentlemen, thank you so much for making time for us.
A pleasure.
Thanks for having
us join you.
Appreciate
Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay, our associate producers, Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, Andrew Windham, and Jamal Milner at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find postings of Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. And when you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about all of our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.